Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And today we're a small but perfectly formed panel of Carol Payton and Sikonathi Mantshantsha and myself, Peter Bruce. And we're going to talk about the country as it is today. I mean, the country seems to be in sort of national hysterics. There's a national strike on. The province of Mpumalanga, northwest is on fire and bits of it. The president cuts short a visit to London to a Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. Carol Payton, Sikonathi, what was it about what happened in Northwest that spooked President Ramaphosa to the extent that he cut short a long planned visit?
Just imagine you're trying to impress the Queen in London together with the other heads of states, former colonies, and each moment...
He was the only one who got an invitation to see her.
Exactly. You're trying to enjoy tea with, is it called high tea, the Queen. And you keep seeing your officials keep running and whispering into your ear.
Now the library's gone.
Yeah, now someone has been killed. Oh. Now the municipal office is on fire in the capital. Oh. And this is where all the platinum comes from. Yeah. What do you do? Drop everything, come back home, and when you arrive you get confronted by reports of this same premier delivering heads of cattle that the people paid for to some former president somewhere. Yeah. And the country is literally on fire, at least that part of the country. And you have to put it out, yet you don't have the water, because the political power lies not with you, the president, lies with the National Executive Committee of the ANC. Half of them don't want to see.
This is you saying you know nothing about politics, but anyway. Carol, what are his options? I mean, because if the people trying to get Supra Mahumapelo out are Cyril's backers, they're actually doing him more damage than good at the moment. They're putting him, you know, they're pushing him into a corner where if he can't act, he'll look extremely weak and lose whatever authority he might have won over the past couple of months.
Well, I don't think he had any choice but to come back, because similar to the situation in Durban, in KwaZulu-Natal, where he is also this week, where he was confronted by a rebellion of people saying, what have you done to Jacob Zuma? He can't leave his general secretary to sort this out, and that's who really should be sorting out these sorts of organizational issues. And yet, I don't think he trusts his general secretary enough to do that.
This is Ace Magashule.
Yeah. So he has to come himself. So that's the one problem. And then I think the other problem is that Cyril's grip on the organization is tenuous, and he knows it. So even though the country has kind of responded really well and with great positivity, there are still rumblings in the ANC, and people looking for opportunities, constantly, tirelessly looking for opportunities.
To do what?
To damage him.
To get rid of him.
To get
There's
rid
a
large of him.
Enough block of people that don't want him there.
So that fight is not over, and he's very aware of that. And I've actually been impressed by the energy and the attention that he's actually been paying to these internal problems, much more than I thought he would. So I think he's doing the right thing in being there, being present, confronting these people, engaging with them. But he does have limited options. So he can't walk in and lay down the law. In Durban and KZN, he can't walk in and lay down the law in Northwest. Northwest, just by the way, has been held together by a strong man, and it's a highly factionalized and difficult province where people have been killing each other in factional fights for many, many years.
Within the ANC.
So those divisions are still there. And as soon as Supra got weaker, those divisions then obviously came to the fore, and those people are still struggling to get in and take control and get rid of Supra. So that is not a struggle that's going to go away, and he has to be careful about how he handles it.
And what would you do? I mean, Carol says, you can't just walk in there and strong arm a premier out of his job, and simply because a whole lot of people running around the streets throwing stones and lighting fires demanding that he go.
Particularly, you can't do so 2 days after the provincial executive has passed a motion of confidence in him,
yeah,
said we support the man.
Yeah.
What you need to do is take that motion into parliament, where obviously it will all be shown to have been a lie, because inside the provincial executive committee, that's where Supra is strongest.
Yeah.
And you'd have a problem trying to get rid of him there, but you can't respond to the street abruptly like that as well.
Yeah.
You have to have a process in place, because it's Supra now, which would be great to get rid of.
Yeah.
But immediately you have that guy in the Eastern Cape, remember those, yeah, chairs flying around, mm-hmm, and you have all the other provinces. So that is going to be his biggest test. How do you deal with it? Again, you're going to deal with it through the movement, through the party, where you have to pull at least enough of that other 50% of, yeah, people that doesn't want you on their side by actually nominating one of them as premier.
Yeah.
And say, oh, Supra's friend, come,
yeah,
we'll make you the premier.
Yeah.
Divide that.
Divide the faction.
Divide that faction,
yeah,
and bring a good number of them onto your side, and you have it. But it's easier said than done, of course.
And what about sort of just due process? I mean, to what extent does when the Zondo Commission on State Capture finally get, when does it actually start? Do we know?
Do they even have offices yet?
Yeah, I mean, this is just crazy. It's taking a long time. But anyway, so it's going to start. Presumably, Supra Mohamopela will be one of the early testifiers. He's a captured premier in the sense that he was part of the Zupta conspiracy, as was Ace Magashule. These people are going to be put under some pressure at some stage this year to explain themselves. And by, you know, the chief prosecutor in the... Or the
I'm glad you are this optimistic. You are saying this year.
this
commission may only sit towards... We are now in May, effectively.
Yeah.
We are in May right now. Yeah. They are busy running around trying to find staff to do the investigations, and even where's their offices? Let's just start there. So this commission may only start, say, call the first witness around September, if we are lucky. And the processes in the government cannot wait for that. The processes, the political process certainly cannot wait for that. And then you have the election coming up. You have to start campaigning.
Exactly.
And you have to start now. So you can't wait for Supra to be called and fired by the commission, or at least to be accused in the thing there. There are processes that should happen, and they should happen now, and you should be responding to the street now.
What is the process that should happen now? What should happen now? What can the government do? What can Cyril do?
In the provinces, we know that the ANC does not put up a candidate for the electorate to decide,
yeah,
on. The ANC seconds or nominates the premier. The, yeah, ANC has to recall the premier.
Okay. So the NEC can do that?
The NEC can do that. Will the NEC do that? That's the
why is the
million-dollar question.
Is there any doubt that the NEC would do that?
I think there is doubt.
Really?
And I don't even know if that would be sufficient for the NEC to recall the premier, because the province nominates the premier. So and then the NEC confirms the premier. So I don't, and that is not even in the ANC constitution, or maybe it is in the ANC constitution.
There must be.
So it's not quite clear what the process is, and whether the ANC NEC would take that step.
But this would be the same ANC NEC that put its hand up to remove Jacob Zuma. Why would it be reluctant to
look,
do it to Supra
Mohamopela? The NEC is absolutely competent. This is its job. However, that candidate, as Carol correctly points out, was nominated by the province.
Yeah.
You get a short list of three people.
Yeah.
And whoever in the ANC had this bright idea that last week they should, in the provincial executive itself, pass a vote of confidence in the premier, then they bound the NEC. Because if the province had said, look, we don't want,
yeah,
this guy, NEC, please recall him,
yeah,
then that would happen. Now there's a complication. The province has said, we've got absolute confidence in the man,
yeah,
and we don't want a secret ballot in parliament.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think another factor is that We've seen that, you know, the general sort of approach that Ramaphosa has taken to the politics of the ANC is to be very careful not to split the ANC. That's been his complete guiding principle.
Yeah.
And similarly, he wouldn't want to split the Northwest. Now, the Northwest is highly fractured, but he wouldn't want to do something which actually gives rise to a big division.
There's not but another I mean, political threat in the Northwest, though, like there might be in the IFP in KwaZulu, and where people could go.
No, at a certain, but just remember that the support, the ANC support for the support for the ANC in the last election dropped dramatically.
In the last general election,
in the Northwest,
yeah.
Dropped dramatically, and it was because of all the corruption and because of all the kind of internal.
Yeah.
Wranglings of the ANC. So I think that's the one thing that Ramaphosa. So he showed a preference for saying, let's wait until the next election and let's do all of these things slowly and let's not split people. But obviously that the dynamics in the Northwest are such that people are saying, no, we've had enough. We want him out now.
But we don't know whether those people are in a political majority or not. I mean,
We don't know who's in a majority and who isn't.
I was trying to write a column about all of this the other day, and I just gave up because I actually don't understand what's going on half the time anymore. It's the party is so opaque, and the rules seem to be so opaque that you never know who is stirring any particular pot at any one time. I mean, you know, if this is pro Ramaphosa rioting going on, they've made life worse for him rather than better.
It's certainly not pro Ramaphosa.
Exactly. Okay.
It's certainly not pro Ramaphosa.
Okay.
It's just anti Supra.
Exactly.
And I was there, by the way.
Yeah.
I was in that town in Mahiking the evening before the real explosion happened.
Yeah.
And they were, when I arrived at the University of the Northwest, there were two distinct camps. I was told that there are people, Supra's house has been besieged. There are people trying to hurt him, to bomb his house. Mm. And then there's another faction at the provincial seat of the government where they were supporting Supra. So you had this collision, and that blew up in the open on Thursday and Friday. It's still going on after Cyril went. So let's wait and see how it will happen, how it will be resolved. But it's not going to be another 3 days or a week.
Yeah.
He's got a process ahead of him, because that is the Nkosazana Dlamini faction, the Jacob Zuma faction that you deal with when you deal with Supra.
Yeah.
Just as much as that problem is trying to hold together in KwaZulu-Natal, you have that narrow margin unlike in 2007 when people and the EFF people, when they walked away, this faction has stayed inside, and that is what is making things difficult.
Mm. And so they're desperate. I mean, there's a lot at stake for them.
Yeah.
So
we'll come back after this break and talk more about this. Welcome back. I've been told to move away from Cyril Ramaphosa and his future and his troubles and all of that. We're going to talk about something else that's probably on his mind as well. South African Airways is looking for another 5 billion rand to, and this is a temporary stay presumably, this is to pay sort of short-term bills and debt. In a way, you can almost understand why they keep giving it the money. It's not to really keep it in business, but I mean, there are so many jobs at stake in the airline and downstream that if they shut it down, I mean, it would be catastrophic.
Catastrophic for who?
The people who lose their jobs.
And should those jobs exist in the first place?
Well, you know, you can say that now, but when it's your job, it's not your fault that the airline's in trouble. It's the management, it's the politicians, it's all the idiots that have been pumping money into this airline and it's not you, it's not the pilot, it's not the air hostess, it's not the technician.
Let's isolate this one thing, the jobs inside the organization and downstream. There's absolutely nothing to be lost downstream if SAA is gone. Let's start there.
Well, that's not strictly true. There'd be less work to do at OR Tambo. There'd be less work to do at all the airports.
Allow me to correct you.
I will.
SAA flies everywhere every other airline does.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's opened this really necessary route that nobody will fly.
Granted.
Yep. The evidence of that, when SAA stopped flying between Cape Town and London 3 years ago, that market is now 27% higher.
Mm.
People arriving in Cape Town from other countries and they don't fly SAA.
Mm.
The flights got cheaper and the market got bigger.
But the jobs go to British Airways. That's
the depressing part about the existence of SAA.
Yeah.
Now, everywhere South African Airways is flying is losing money. There's someone doing it better. Flying between Johannesburg and all those destinations. Mm. Then let's come to SAA, the jobs itself. SAA employs some 11,000 people.
Mm.
It should only be employing 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Those are the jobs to be lost because they should not be there.
It employs more people than Lufthansa, I'm told.
Absolutely, yes. And how much money does it make?
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah.
Since the financial year 2007, this I have done.
Yeah.
SAA has generated revenue between 2007 and 2017, the financial year ended March there. Revenue of 266 billion rand over the 10 years.
Mm.
It has made a net loss in those years of 18 billion rand, 18.1 billion rand.
Now, how does that happen? Is that all corruption? Is it the wrong planes? What is it?
That's corruption. That's the wrong planes, the wrong management.
Yeah.
And indeed, SAA is serving as just a free transportation for people that work in government and their officials, but that's not the biggest part. The biggest part is, should SAA even be doing what it is doing? The answer is a clear no. There's then something called air chefs, which is draining sense. How many times have you climbed onto SAA and been offered that dry sandwich that you don't even eat
in a box?
Like hard and dry and cold, and then take the returning flight on British Airways, and you want to sit and eat.
Yeah.
Just as a start.
No, I get it, you know, and I get the argument for we don't need a national carrier and all that, but the fact is that still, you shut it down, you will lose 11,000 jobs overnight, and you'll lose a lot of skills. I mean, the pilots in SAA are some of the best in the world. They'll go. Nobody's going to start another airline in South Africa to cover for SAA. British Airways might put, or Comair might put a few more old 737s on the route between Cape Town and Johannesburg. But it'll get tighter, and it'll get more expensive. And we just need to realize that that is a consequence.
Is it cheaper now?
Huh? Well, we won't know.
I've just given you the figures. 18.1 billion rand.
Hmm.
In net losses.
Sure.
Let me add to your problems.
Yeah.
Over the past 24 years alone, South Africa, you and I have donated 55 billion rand
I'm not
in
arguing
cash bailouts.
In defense of South African Airways existing. I started making this argument long before you did.
Sure.
But I've just paid now this morning to SAF Air, cheapest flights in the country, right?
Yes.
One-way ticket for my son from Cape Town to Joburg on next Wednesday is 2,000 rand. That's not a cheap flight. That's an expensive flight.
Peter.
You know, and if there's less competition, that SAF Air is going to go for 3,000 rand
Peter,
for a one-way ticket.
Over the past 15 years in South Africa, we have lost 11 airlines.
Yeah, no. Look,
we have lost them only because of that 266 billion rand that's been wasted by South African Airways, the 55 billion rand that I've just spoken about, the bailouts, the 18 billion rands in losses. How much is that? This SAA is there, has got, it's unfair competition.
Mm.
Should poor people be subsidizing your son, who can obviously afford to fly? Should the poor people who don't have, should the parents of Michael Komape...
You cannot make a decent argument for SAA continuing to exist.
Other than that,
you're going to put a lot of people out of work when you close it down, which you're going to have to close it down.
You are going to put a lot of people out of work and create opportunities for real business people to come run airlines and hire those people.
Maybe. People drift off and they go and do other things, and
it's a similar argument, Peter, to on the Eskom question. You know, I mean, nobody wants to lose jobs.
Yeah.
But I mean, Eskom has probably got four times the amount of staff that it needs.
Yeah.
Well, and so we all know why it's important to have an efficient Eskom, because it affects the entire economy.
And the interesting thing, though, is even in our recent memory, both Eskom and SAA have made profits. When Kaya Ngula left SAA, there was 3 billion rand in the bank. It got spent. And why, by the way, the board that replaced him?
It got stolen, not spent.
Well, whatever happened, but he had, he didn't have a great reputation as a manager, and he was, messed around by the unions, and the incoming board tried to charge him for stealing money, which they never proceeded with. They just left the accusation hanging unfairly, I thought, over his head. It can make money. I mean, what he did at SAA, he got in some, it was Seabury, I think, the Canadian, and they literally sat in a room and passed every single invoice. And they either put it into a yes or a no, whether you claimed expenses for your petrol to get to everywhere or whether you were buying a new airplane. Seabury would decide whether they would pay or not. And they crunched the costs so dramatically at SAA, which is partly why Nula was chased out of the company, because people couldn't stand the pressure.
That's the thing.
It's possible to do it, though.
The problem is not SAA. The problem is the shareholder, the government.
Yeah.
That is the problem. It's not that SAA cannot not make money. For the past 84 years that SAA has been trying to make money, Comair has been making money for 76 of those, for its entire existence, and it does the same thing.
Yeah.
The problem is the shareholder. It is when the government decides that SAA will be an employment agency rather than an airline operator. That is the problem. The problem is when the government decides SAA will be a conduit for tenders. We will put the worst possible thieves on top so that they can chase away all the people who know what they do. The result is what you get.
Yeah.
You and I have paid, I repeat again, over the past 24 years, 55 billion rand. And in 84 years of SAA's existence, it has not paid a dividend to the government. In the last 10 years, it has only made profit 3 times.
Yeah.
And those were the years you just spoke about, when Kaya Ngula was chief executive.
If you cut out, are there aspects of SAA that are profitable, domestic routes or international routes? I mean, what a lot of Latin American countries have done is continue to be flag carriers, so they have an international airline but not a domestic one.
There are the routes into the rest of Africa where nobody else flies. That's where SAA makes its money, and that was Kaya Ngula's strategy. Instead of flying the damn thing for 12 hours to London with British Airways and Emirates flying cheaper next to you, where you don't get customers, you fly at 40% capacity. Fly to Benin, fly to Lagos, fly to Abuja, fly to Nairobi. That's what SAA, that's where it makes money. But they've got this idea that they call, it's a developmental idea. We'll fly to Argentina.
And it's ridiculous.
We'll fly to Argentina where nobody goes.
There's no strategic
Exactly. That's the problem with SAA.
Yeah.
When you put shareholders there who demand a return for their money, they will do exactly what Seabury did and Kaya Ngula and decide, this is where we'll make money, this is where we'll fly. You shut off the route where you have competition. You don't need to be flying there as SAA. And by the way, the flag carrier, British Airways is a private company.
Yeah.
It's flying that flag and paying royalties to the government.
The argument also, though, is, Carol, that we're no longer a good African hub, because if you look at the way the world is working, you've got big hubs in now in Dubai, and East Africa becomes more attractive, and Ethiopia and Addis becomes a better hub to get into Africa than Johannesburg is, because you've got to come all the way down here before you go all the way back up to all these lovely African destinations, you know.
But I think that Mango did show, Peter, Mango did show that
you can run
an airline, a domestic airline, profitably.
I always remember Kaya used to complain about the cost of pilots, and who were terribly spoiled.
And that in fact is one of the key issues, because SAA have these there's one place I can agree with Dudu Mieni, and that is that the pilots do have incredibly good conditions of service, and that they are crippling part of what is crippling
many
the
of them,
so
many
the
of them
Mango doesn't have
overseas.
To pay those. Mango doesn't have to pay those.
But that's
those
why
contracts.
It's impossible to merge them.
Exactly. That's why you can't merge
the conditions,
them.
Yeah.
But it does show there are ways that you can run a domestic airline profitably.
Does the political will exist, do you think, to shut it down? I mean, would they?
Right now it does, not to shut it down, but to partly privatize it. Mm. First, you need to merge, because you don't need SAA, Mango and SAA Express, all of them at once. So SAA Express has no reason to exist. Again, the biggest problem there is the shareholder. Mm. If you get good managers to run the airlines and do what they should do, get the politicians out of it, that's where the problem is. That's where all the corruption comes from. There is right now on the table the option that Pravin worked on before he was fired as finance minister, which is to sell a stake to private holders, and then they would run the airline. There is now that will, because the alternative is that...
It's too ghastly to contemplate.
Exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately,
the Technical is a pretty good outfit still, I believe.
It
I
was, mean. For a very long time, the biggest technical airline maintenance company in Africa, and it had all the skills. Again, we got to Dumieni and the other tender premiers on there, and it all went haywire.
Yeah. So some hope perhaps that SAA gets resolved sensibly very quickly. I don't understand the mining charter and why the new minerals minister Gwede wants to overturn the court ruling, which says that you can only be empowered once. What do you think of it? I mean,
could I come in here? Because
sure.
I mean, I think that there has been a misconception about what, in fact, he is appealing.
Ah.
So he's not appealing the once empowered, always empowered principle, which applied in Charter 1.
Yeah.
He's appealing the fact that the judgment also said that the law only allowed for Charter 1, and it never made any allowance for Charter 2 and Charter 3. So therefore, Charter 2 and Charter 3 are to have no basis in law. And that is what he's appealing. Because if he cannot establish the legal basis for Charter 3, which is what they're negotiating now, then there's no Charter 3. So,
is the Chamber of Mines opposing him?
No, they're
so
not opposing
it's all
him. No,
fairly
the Chamber
friendly.
Of Mines are not opposing him. They also want, they realize we this is where we're at. Mining charter is part of the territory, and so no, they're not challenging him. They're not.
I mean, I was at a dinner the other night with a lot of businessmen, and the feeling, the positivity towards Ramaphosa was amazing, and a lot of them were miners as well. So perhaps that'll get resolved.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't
rationally.
Mean that it means that the once empowered, always empowered doesn't apply to Charter 1, but it doesn't mean that it won't apply in the future. That's a separate debate.
We'll learn more as things go along. But thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back again next week.